You're tuned to the Book Club on Perspectives, and joining us today is author Jim Cole. His debut novel, I believe it's his debut, and we'll talk to Jim in a bit about that, is Never Cry Again. And this is actually the first of a trilogy involving, I'm not going to tell anything about the story just yet. We're going to talk to Jim first, and then we'll talk a little bit about the book. Jim, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be there.
So was I right in saying this is your debut novel?
This is basically my debut novel, yes.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? What did you do? All of that.
Well, I was born in a small town in South Texas named Victoria, Texas, and I live there today. Went to high school here in Victoria, Texas, and then later went to the University of Houston over in Houston and studied engineering and graduated with a degree in civil engineering and joined a company upon graduation and stayed with that company for all of my working career, over 40 years, and retired in 1999 and returned to Victoria. And I've basically been in Victoria all my life except for those 40 years while living in Houston.
And as far as your writing career, when did you get interested in that? Well, first of all, were you always interested in reading and writing as a child growing up?
Oh, as a child, yes. I read all of the childhood books. I read Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys and Toby Tyler and, you know, all of those. I was a big time reader, but I never thought that I would be a writer. Creating a story never really seemed to me to be something I would ever want to do. I enjoyed reading and I enjoyed stories and still do enjoy reading. In fact, some of the authors that you have at ktep.org, Perspectives, are authors that I've followed for years and really like the way they write.
So at what point did you decide, I'm going to try this?
Well, when I retired, people kept saying to me, well, what are you going to do when you retire? And I frankly didn't know, but just casting around for something that I thought might be interesting, I decided to go out to Rice and to their School of Continuing Education. And we were living in Houston still. And I took classes in creative writing with never any idea that I could do anything in writing. I just thought it might be an interesting thing to do. And so I took several classes. And in one of those classes, the guy that was teaching the class encouraged me. He says, you know, you're a pretty good writer. You ought to continue this and start learning more and whatever. And about that time, I got introduced to an editor at the Houston Chronicle. He was in charge of the Houston Chronicle's Sunday supplement magazine, and he was looking for a stable of writers to do short stories. And so I wrote a couple of short stories and wound up joining his stable. So I wrote short stories for the Houston Chronicle Sunday Supplement magazine. Now, there was a stable of writers. There were about 10 of us, I think, who submitted their stories from time to time, and the editor would pick one that he liked and put that one in the paper. So there wasn't really any sort of deadline towards doing it, but he did pick a number of my stories and put them in the paper, and people would read them and comment about them. And that was fun, you know, to have people read what you'd written and then talk to you later and say, yeah, I read your story. I really liked it. I began to think that maybe I could write. And we sort of went along that way for a few years. And then, of course, the Chronicle decided they didn't want to have a Sunday supplement magazine anymore. And they fired the editor, the advertising staff, and his stable of writers. We all went off to try to do something else. One of those short stories that I had written for the Chronicle that didn't get published. I would show it to people, and we'd laugh and joke about being a writer and whatnot, and I'd show it to people. And people would say, then what happened? I said, No, it's a short story. There's nothing more to the story. And people kept insisting, oh, well, you know, your family's going to like anything you do. You know how that is. But in any case, there were people that read it and people that I thought were family. And they liked it. And they said, what happened next? So I picked it up one day and just started sort of fiddling around with it. And I fiddled with it and fiddled with it. And that story ultimately became Never Cry Again. I had no idea I was going to write a book. But after a few years, I figured, yeah, I'm about to get a book here.
We're visiting with author Jim Cole. He is the author of the book Never Cry Again. Jim, I'm sorry I interrupted. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I started going over to Houston to the Houston Writers Guild meetings. And they have several seminars they put on during the year and things like that. And they also have a three-day affair every September called Indiepalooza. And I met with a lot of people there who published their books, many of them through traditional publishers or people who publish their books through independent publishers. And I learned a little bit about the business of being an author and putting your book out there and getting your book out. So that was very helpful. And I wound up picking an online publisher and getting the book edited and formatted and a cover designed and got it put out and got the book out there. That was 2016. I actually began working on it some 12 years earlier. So it took a while.
Well, now the book is actually doing very well. It's starting to climb up. You got a lot of good reviews. As I told you when we communicated via the internet before, I came across it through Audible. And so I decided to look further into it. And as I mentioned, you had a lot of good reviews. So I decided we'd have you on the program to tell us more about this book. The book, again, is called Never Cry Again. And this is book one of a planned trilogy. It starts off with Edith and her being a little girl. And the protagonist actually is the name Andrew. They call him Drew, and he is Edith's son. But perhaps, Jim, if you could kind of take us back to when Edith was a little girl, and she led a very tough life.
Yes, she did lead a tough life in West Texas in Lubbock on a sharecropper's farm in the 1920s. But Edith's tough life is really what led her to being as hateful and cruel towards her son as she was. Edith's life was so tough, and she had to do some things to just basically help herself. And instead of making someone like that more empathetic to other people, it made Edith less empathetic to other people. And Edith's personality grew to the point where she was basically a sociopath. She learned that the only way she could make her living was through prostitution, and she frankly enjoyed the life of being a prostitute. Not that the sex was anything for her, but the fact that she could lay around all day and not have anything to do and then entertain men at night. And it became a life that she basically enjoyed as long as she had alcohol to help her tolerate everything. So she became an alcoholic as well, and then she got pregnant, and she didn't want the baby. Oh, goodness. However, she did carry the child to term and then wanted to abandon the child immediately. She's still in a bawdy house in Little Rock, Arkansas, and she's an elderly maid who works there at the bawdy house. When Edith says, I don't want him, get him out of here. There were no Children's Protective Services in those days. Get him out of here. I don't want this kid. So this elderly black maid who works at the house, she takes him. And she takes him to her rural evangelical Christian congregation right outside the city limits of Little Rock. And he stays basically with these people, sometimes with the elderly maid in a shack behind the bawdy house, for 5 years. So for 5 years, his family is the family of this evangelical, black, rural Christian church. People come up to me and when I'm at a book signing or something, and they say, well, does he find Jesus? Why, no, Jesus finds him from the very beginning. So he learns their religion, and he learns their love, and he sees, and I try to point it out through the little boy's eyes, the bigotry and hatred and prejudice that his family, his friends, the only people he's ever known who really love him, and how they're treated in their lives in Arkansas in the 1930s.
We're visiting with Jim Cole, the author of the book Never Cry Again, and yeah, we're kind of going over the novel, not giving it away, but there's a lot of twists and turns in this novel, Jim, that people think it's going to go somewhere in some way, and then you turn it around, even though at the beginning of every chapter, you kind of tell us where it's going to be taking place, leaving home, getting into a fight, whatever. But then you realize that this is actually a buildup to something else. And as you mentioned a little while earlier, the dark chapters in our country, and especially in this area of Oklahoma, when Drew leaves, because they leave Oklahoma, right? I mean, they leave Oklahoma to go to Arkansas?
Well, he winds up at age 10 in southern rural Arkansas with his mother. They're living in a three-room house in a small rural town in southern Arkansas. She's been forced to take him back because the Jim Crow laws have kicked in, and it's against the law for a white child to be in a black church. The authorities take him away from the only family he's ever known, make his mother take him back. She moves to rural southern Arkansas and sets up shop. His room's the front room of this little shotgun house. The kitchen's in the middle. She sets up shop in the back bedroom and entertains men that she calls to the little boy. She tells the little boy, these are your uncles. And she entertains them, and they bring her liquor and money, and she pays almost no attention to the boy. The way he survives during those next 5 years, between the age of 5 and the age of 10, is through the love and nurture and hope that the black community that surrounds the house they live in give him. They teach him how, they even teach him how to cook for himself, but she won't cook for him. She's never changed her mind. She hates him. And all through the book, she hates him. And when he's 10, she tells him he has to leave home. She just says, get out. And he thinks that he needs to go, that he can go to his friends at Little Rock. Okay, I'm 10 years old. I've got to leave, and it's winter, and it's 1936. And it's southern rural Arkansas, but if I could get to Little Rock. He climbs on board a freight train. It's parked at a siding. And he climbs into this open boxcar, and he thinks the train's going to take him north, where he can go to Little Rock. But no, it doesn't take him north. The train's headed south into northern Louisiana, where he knows no one. And this is when the seminal moment of the book, to me, occurs. When the little boy realizes at age 10 that his childhood is now over. And now he has to face life on his own terms.
And I noticed in the middle of the book where the title of the book actually appears. Because
exactly.
He thinks he's never going to cry again.
Yes, it's a cry of defiance where he screams into the wind because he's just realized the train's rattling south into Louisiana and he's just come to the firm conclusion that his childhood is now over. A 10-year-old wouldn't say it that way, of course. Instead, he goes to the door of the boxcar and he screams into the wind. He's angry at his mother. He's angry at his life. And he says, I'll never cry again. And that's the seminal moment of the story. Because from that point on his own, but he's leading himself and directing himself. And he's taking charge and he's moving through his life.
We're visiting with Jim Cole. He's the author of the book Never Cry Again. It's the first part of a planned trilogy, and it involves the little boy, as Jim has been telling us, Andrew Drew Cole, who was born as a result of his mother having an affair. And then the baby is born, but the mom works in a brothel. The mom doesn't care for the little boy. She doesn't want him around. And quite frankly, after a while, the madam of the house doesn't want him around either because he would be bad for business. And so he is not formally, but sort of adopted by some people in the a black church in Oklahoma and in Little Rock, Arkansas. Tell us a little bit about the historical. Would you say that this is a historical fiction, historical novel?
I do include events that are actual events of the times. I point out some things that were happening in the world while all the rest of this story is going on. Of course, it was the years of America's Great Depression, but in those years, there were other issues happening around the globe. And I point out some of these things. In fact, I have a scene where the boy is with a man who's ultimately adopts him and provides him with safety, and he's 15. And I have a scene where neighbors gather around the radio that they've taken out on their front porch because it's December 7th, 1941. And even though they're in Dallas, Texas, through the magic of radio, they can hear bombs falling in Hawaii. And this whole scene of these neighbors around, crowding around, listening to the radio, someone bringing in coffee so people could sit around and listen for that whole long afternoon in Dallas, Texas, is a scene that I actually witnessed in real life at my house. We were living in Houston at the time, and people actually came over to our house and listened to the radio that we had out on the front porch. And the terror experienced by those people and the horror, I said terror, I should have said horror, experienced by those people, I tried to describe how the fictitious people in Dallas react to the way I saw real people in Houston, Texas react as the bombs fell.
So you were a little boy then, Jim, when this happened?
I was seven years old on December 7th, 1941.
And you still remember
and
all that?
I clearly remember the radio and the bombs falling and all this sort of business happening.
We're visiting with Jim Cole. He is the author of the book Never Cry Again. Jim Cole, again, author Never Cry Again. We were talking a little bit about what you just mentioned, listening to the attack on Pearl Harbor, the news reports, all that. And as you read the book, anyone who reads the book, as they follow through, you must have done a lot of research for this, Jim, because, I mean, the paragraphs, the way the conversations between people, you just write everything the way you could close your eyes and listen to it, because I did listen to a little bit on Audible, and you can hear those people and visually just see them in your mind speaking to each other, like the part when they're at the waterhole swimming and Drew and his friend get attacked by those teenage boys.
Yes, I write the way I remember people talking in those days. I wasn't in rural Arkansas growing up. I was in South Texas growing up, but kids are kids all over the world. And how people talked in those days, I remember clearly. Well, for example, the use of the N-word was casual. And it's striking now, looking back, and at how casually in the 1930s and 40s and on, people use the N-word in speaking about people of color. It's strange today, it seems, but in those days, it was common. It was accepted. White people, in many instances, didn't use the word in what they would have considered an abusive or hurtful way. It was just the way they talked. They didn't mean to hurt. But they were blind to the hurt and pain that N-word and other things that they did in those days towards Negroes. They were blind to the pain that caused. And that forms the basis for what ultimately will be, I hope, a trilogy. Because the theme throughout this book, while this little boy struggles and goes on, there's a sub-theme of bigotry and hatred of people of color, and how these people are treated Now, I didn't try to write a book about Black America. I can't do that. I'm a white guy. I don't know if anybody can really write a book about Black America. But what I do write about is what the boy sees. I write what you, the reader, can see through the little boy's eyes about how these people are treated. And so bigotry and prejudice is this sublime theme that will go through, I think, each of the books of the trilogy. The second book, I'm just about to the point of, I think it should be published and available on Amazon in a couple of months. I'm getting really close. The underlying theme of that book is anti-Semitism that occurred in the South in those days. And there was a lot of that, too. So now I have two books. The theme of one is bigotry and prejudice against Black people. The theme of the other is bigotry and prejudice against Jewish people. And then book three would bring the two protagonists, the protagonist from the second book and the protagonist from Never Cry, together in Dallas, Texas, in the 1960s, against and fighting against the bigotry and prejudice of against Negroes and Jews and everything else that occurred in the 1960s, with Martin Luther King's rallies in Dallas, the murder of a president in Dallas, and that will wind up being book three of the trilogy.
We're visiting with award-winning author Jim Cole. The book is Never Cry Again. This is part one of a trilogy, and Jim just described a little bit about book two and book three, but book one is already out, Jim Cole, Never Cry Again. The book ends right around World War II, and is that where we pick up in book two?
Well, no. Book two, each of the books is written as a standalone.
Okay.
So book two actually begins in the 1920s with a family in Galveston, Texas. And book two is really billed as a story of World War II Galveston, because World War II in Galveston was an interesting and exciting place, and yet there was also anti-Semitism and racial hatred and things like that still on the island, even though the war was raging. Tankers were being sunk off the coast of Galveston. Literal fact, a torpedo washed up on the beach one day in Galveston, Texas in 1943, a German torpedo, a live German torpedo. We just simply washed up on the beach. They'd fired it at a ship or something and missed. And there it was. At the intersection of 38th Street and Seawall Boulevard in Galveston, Texas, where the beach is today, is where the torpedo washed up. Everybody in Galveston went down to look at it. While the army came in and dismantled it and made it safe and then picked it up and moved it. So things like that happened in the second book. And the first book, I'm excited about it. I'm pleased with Never Cry. I'm glad that a number of people have read it and liked it and told me so. And we'll see how it works out.
Tell us a little bit about the cover of the book and also the picture in the back.
Well, the cover of the book is a little boy in the door of this boxcar. So it is the seminal moment of the book where the boy declares he'll never cry again. He's in this boxcar and he's all slumped over and he's being rattled, taken off to who knows where. At one point in time, I was writing on the book and I'd never described the geographic location where the boy was. And at that point in time, and my wife and I took a small vacation. We decided to drive up to the Ozarks, and we drove around and had a nice driving vacation in the Ozarks. Going through El Dorado, Arkansas, I had a sudden urge to just simply turn off the road. I don't know why. And we drove off towards the southern part of El Dorado near the oil refinery, and in a really poor, rundown section of El Dorado, there sat a three-room shotgun house. That is exactly the way I had described the house years earlier when I wrote chapter one. I went crazy. My wife was in the car with me. She said she was going nuts too. She said, this is not real. I said, yeah, it is. That's what the house looked like when I wrote about it. And there it is. And I took a picture. And that's the pictures on the back of the book of that house in El Dorado, Arkansas. The house is owned by this nice lady. It was unoccupied. She allowed me to, I told her I was going to publish the picture. She said, fine, but put my name under it. So I did. That's Miss Mary Alice Allnut. So that house, for me, defined the geographic location of the story. That's the first time the story had a geographic location. It's southern Arkansas. And I created a fictitious town named Union City. There is no Union City. But that house is in southern Arkansas, in a rural part of El Dorado. And that's kind of where I put my fictitious city called Union City.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today. Before we leave, if you wouldn't mind giving us perhaps a webpage or a place where people can go to find out more about your book?
Yes, they can. I have a Facebook page, Jim Cole, award-winning author. And I also have a webpage called coalmines.com. That's coalmines, coalmines.com. And you can go to either of those. You can find schedules there for book signings. You can learn a little bit more about the book. You can read some reviews, the whole text of some of the reviews that from Kirkus and from book bloggers and things like that that don't get on Amazon. And so I encourage people to check out the Facebook page and also to go and check out coalmines.com.
Again, Jim, thank you so much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with award-winning author Jim Cole, the author of the book Never Cry Again. This is book one of a trilogy, and we're looking forward to talking about the second book with you, Jim. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Louie.
Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to you.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Sam Castellano. Our producer is Alejandra Dominguez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sainz.